You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
And I think that's kind of what DevOps is all about, right? Like breaking down the barriers, making people self-sufficient, really just like accelerating the IT process.
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Member Experience at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. Welcome back. Hope you had a great couple weeks there. We are finally back and live excited to be here with you today. So on the show today, we will be talking about the concept of cursive knowledge. This is a new topic to me, so I'm excited to kind of get into it. It might be new to you. Maybe you haven't heard the term cursive knowledge before, but I think the concept, once we get into it, you might be familiar with. So the concept of cursive knowledge is which one unknowingly assumes that others have the same insider background to understand a concept. It's the opposite of the Buddhist concept of beginner's mind, but we'll get more into that later. And with me to talk about cursive knowledge is a panel. We're doing a panel today. This is always exciting when we have more than one guest. Are Eric Ayanu and Nick Grisafi. Eric is a software engineer at Toolchain Labs, and Eric is focused on empowering developers to build at scale through the open source Pants Build project. Eric is a volunteer crisis counselor for LGBTQ youth and aspiring pig parent, which I will also be definitely coming back to later in the program. Eric, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I really appreciate the focus of the podcast. Actually, for a brief stint, I was a middle school computer science teacher. And one of the big perceptions that my students had was that tech and software engineering is something that if you're social and like humans, you shouldn't do. Stereotype of the hackers in their garage. And that was one of the biggest things I tried dispelling with my students is, no, actually modern technology is something that's extremely collaborative. You're ultimately building for humans and with other humans. So excited to be here today.
Absolutely. Appreciate you saying that. And we have 100% touched on that very topic. In fact, you could go back and listen to the episode on VR, where we went into the metaverse and its powers, because it is such a collaborative environment that we like to have, right, in the world of tech. So, and also joining me is Nick Grisafi. And Nick is a software engineer at Rippling with a strong passion for DevOps and scaling processes with automation. On the side, you'll also find Nick exploring the great outdoors with his dog or tinkering with DIY projects. I also think, Nick, you should probably build Eric's pig a pig pen.
Oh, we'll definitely get to that.
Yeah, well, welcome. Good to be here. Welcome to the show. All right. So are we ready to get human and start this panel?
Let's do it.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. So I did my little intro on cursive knowledge. Why don't each of you take your own crack at defining just what cursive knowledge is? Nick, let's start with you.
Yeah. So I think for cursive knowledge, when you're building something, you don't always put yourself in the shoes of the end user, right? It takes so long to get to the point to have a stable product, and you know the ins and outs of it. But if you don't put yourself in the shoes of the person who's going to be using it, let's say for that first hour of downloading the product and trying to get it up and running, that's really the most critical point to have adoption, right? That person needs to get something from a proof, just an idea to a proof of concept, and show that it can do what it's supposed to do. If you don't design your tool in a way where you're thinking like, how can somebody come from nothing to something, then that person could ultimately fail, right? So it's really important to recognize that you have this curse so you can adjust and you could build a product that anybody can approach and understand and have one of the best first hour experiences of their lives and then be able to promote it to everybody.
I already have a follow-up question, but Eric, I really want to hear your definition as well.
Yeah, so I first heard about the idea of curse of knowledge in the book Made to Stick, Why Some Ideas Survive and Others Die, which is an awesome book, highly recommend. And it's something I think a lot about as an open source maintainer, that I view it essentially, once knowledge is a great thing, but once you have it, it's really hard to remember what it was like before you knew that thing. So for example, with DevOps, if you've been listening to this podcast, you read a lot of books and go to different meetups, and you know all these different DevOps best practices, and you're trying to convince your non-technical manager about why your organization should be using some new DevOps best practice, it often feels really obvious and intuitive to you. And it's hard to remember what it's like for your non-technical manager, who might not be totally clear what DevOps is or what this best practice is, that it seems obvious and it's frustrating. Like, why is this person not getting it? Everyone knows that we need to be doing this, without remembering that 5 years ago, 15 years ago, you didn't know what DevOps was. And it's hard to put yourself back in that perspective. So since learning that knowledge, I think it's made me a lot better of an open source maintainer. And it's helped our project out a lot to constantly remind ourselves that we have this curse, and we need to be thinking about what it's like to not have this baseline understanding.
It reminds me of when I was teaching my mother how to text. it's something I took for granted because I knew how to do it. And then my mother had no idea. Now, literally, all she does is text. So it's that, exactly, that institutional knowledge, right?
And you passed on the curse.
I passed on the curse. Yes. Well, I think we have all passed on that curse.
We're talking about like fairly new things here, like DevOps and texting, but curse of knowledge is something that might be a fairly new name for a concept that's always existed. If anyone has heard the allegory of the cave by Plato, I think that can be understood through the perspective of curse of knowledge. That, gonna mess this up a little bit, but the allegory is essentially that a lot of people are in this cave and they see these terrifying shadows, and no one wants to leave, and they're afraid of what will happen if they leave the cave. And then finally, one person is brave enough to do it, and they go outside and realize that all they are is shadows, and that there's this amazing new world out there. But when they come back to the cave, they have an extremely hard time explaining this concept and this new insight to everyone. And they are stuck with this curse.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess it could be flipped too, right? Because there's a lot of positive when you have that blank slate, not really knowing that institutional knowledge. And then we unload all of the knowledge on you. And, you know, I think of, I do this a lot on this podcast, but I liken everything to being a parent and, you know, my daughter, and trying to explain concepts to a four-year-old is very difficult, because you might use, you're using words they don't even know what that means. Okay, so you're explaining something, and then you have to explain what that thing is, and so on and so forth. And then there's also a beauty of kind of not knowing anything.
And you always see that referred to online on threads, right? People explain like I'm five. Like, give me the 10,000 foot overview of this, so I don't have to think too hard.
Right.
I think we see that every day in culture.
Absolutely. So then this is the next question. Is it a good curse or a bad curse? This sounds like are you a good witch or a bad witch? Is it good?
I mean, so I think their knowledge, we work really hard to get, and we do it for a reason. It's what allows us to do our jobs effectively. I know, for example, as an open source maintainer, the knowledge that I've worked hard over the past few years to understand deeply how the system's architected, its history, and all of the culture behind it, has made me a lot more effective. When I want to make a change, I can go in a lot quicker than when I first started working on it as an intern, I think 3.5 years ago. It helps me when others want to make change, that I can go mentor them and help them navigate it all. So there's definitely, we work hard for that knowledge. There's definitely some upside to it, but a lot of the downsides, like we're talking about.
Yeah, what about you, Nick? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny because Eric and I were talking about this the other day, and he brought up a concept I wasn't really familiar with, but the bus factor. Like, at any moment in time, let's say you're the person who retains this knowledge, What happens if you get hit by a bus? What happens if something bad happens, right? Where does that put you in your business? Were they relying on you for certain processes? So I think it's a good thing when you have the ability to share knowledge. If everybody can retain and take responsibility and have that be a shared responsibility, then it's a good thing. But it turns into a bad thing when only one individual maybe retains that knowledge or one specific team, and then problems arise. And if they're not there to save the day, then it's a full-blown fire, right? And that's nothing, no organization wants that.
Yeah, I guess for me, I always love being the new person, because it's like everybody thinks you have a ton of great ideas because they've all been thinking one thing, you know, groupthink, and you're just set in your ways, and no matter how hard you try to not be, like you said, you already have that knowledge. But the new person always comes in with like a breath of fresh air and has all these great concepts, and then you fall into the same thing in a few months. So you can only be the new person for so long.
Yeah. And I think it's, go ahead.
I was going to say, I agree. And that's what a lot of Buddhist circles call beginner's mind, of celebrating that when you come in as a new person, you don't have all these blind spots yet. And it's something that we should actively try to cultivate and go back to having that beginner's mind.
So let's bring it back to to IT and leadership. And maybe you could give some examples of cursive knowledge in IT specifically. We gave a few that weren't in IT, and then how does it how and maybe applying to leadership as well.
One example of cursive knowledge that we think a lot about with the Pants project is our documentation and our error messages of like what's the daily experience of our users, that we think about power users versus everyday users. Who power users are people who might be active on GitHub. Maybe they aren't contributing code, but they are in our Slack and they're reading all the documentation extensively, versus a lot of our everyday users are, they don't really care about the Pants tool. We assume that they aren't reading the docs. They might be newer to programming and might not be as familiar with all the concepts. So we try to remind ourselves that we have a curse of knowledge when we're working with our power users, and when we're doing things like writing documentation, we have confirmation bias of our power users saying docs are good, for example. Well, we want to hear from the everyday users. So a concrete example we had of this was an error message for sometimes when you run our tool, Linux will kill the program because it's using too much memory. And there's a question of how much detail do we go into on explaining what this is, that if you already are really heavy into Linux and tools like this, you'll know right away what this means. And we can just use a little phrase like OOM killer, for example. There's a whole world of engineers out there and DevOps people out there who don't have any idea what that is. And we ended up rewriting the error message so that we strike a balance of introducing what the concept is, assuming you haven't heard what this problem is of memory management, but pointing you to other resources so that you can, if you already are an expert, you can leverage the knowledge you already have. And if you don't know anything about it, you can go to these resources that we link to and learn more about it.
Great. And what about you, Nick?
Yeah, I think Eric's example of error messages is super important. I've even heard people in the industry talk about switching programming languages, like let's say from Python to Go, just because they have better error messages and things are more clear. And documentation makes sense, right, for the beginner. Now I'm seeing things like in Python community happening, newer releases where they're just improving error messages, improving stack traces to make things easier for that beginner or anybody who's just new coming in who might not fully understand what's going on. So I think that's a perfect example, like documentation, use case, always explain things or point to resources so people can figure out what's going on, not sifting into the internals and trying to figure out what calls actually made and then all that time you spend researching that. No, it's like saved you a click, saved you research, just go here and figure it out type of thing.
Today's episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast is sponsored by Collide. Collide is an endpoint security solution that sends your employees important and timely security recommendations for their Linux, Mac, and Windows devices right inside Slack. Collide is perfect for organizations that care deeply about compliance and security, but don't want to get there by locking down devices to the point where they become unusable. Instead of frustrating your employees, Collide educates them about security and device management while directing them to fix important problems. You can try Collide with all its features on an unlimited number of devices free for 14 days. No credit card required. Visit collide.com/HODP to sign up today. That's Collide, KOLIDE.com/HODP. Enter your email when prompted to receive your free Collide gift bundle after trial activation. And so, in case you touched on this a little bit in your explanations, the experience side of me is thinking this sounds awful like the beginning of a user journey, a customer journey, or roadmap. You know, what's your first six? How do you start? You know, where's the start button? How do we go from that to the next step, to the next step, to the next step? So how does that, you know, explain the dynamic maybe between open source developers, their lead sponsors of the software, and then with customers and the developers who use it?
Yeah, I like that where they start. That I think that's been the most important thing for our project, is inviting people to actively share their feedback, especially if you are a beginner. If you go to Pansa's docs, you'll see that we have on almost every page an invitation of like, hey, we'd love to hear your feedback. What is confusing? You can join our Slack, reach out on GitHub. And we find that newcomers are often hesitant to share their feedback. They think that, we've heard from a couple of people, they say like, I haven't used enough time to actually like want to share my opinion. And we explicitly name this idea of curse of knowledge and say, no, we are so grateful for your feedback, because that is exactly what we want to hear. I mean, we also assume when we have a user who's sharing feedback and is confused about something, there's probably like 10 other people at least out there. It's like when teachers always say in school, if you have a question, you should ask it, because there's probably 5 other people in the classroom who have that same question. We view the same thing with our open source project.
So glad you used that example, because that's exactly where my head went.
Yeah.
When you said that. What about for you, Nick?
Yeah, I think the collaboration piece is super important. Like if you search anything like a Python monorepo build system, like, and then seeing that first intro blurb for Pants, that's your gateway, right? That gets you into it. And then once you have a community and collaboration that is very open and welcoming, you just kind of just get even more interested and you want to help like these people, because they really helped you. And it is just a really positive experience. And I think that's kind of what DevOps is all about, right? Like breaking down the barriers, making people self-sufficient, really just like accelerating the IT process. So I think what Pants does is an example that a lot of open source communities can follow to have a successful project.
And then so that knowledge and that kind of that onboarding of the new person, how does that then impact the software development itself?
There's a lot of the priorities that we do. We try very hard to be a community-driven community-driven project that it's open source, so anyone can contribute what they want. Maintainers also do try to listen to what users are asking for. So a couple concrete things. One is the prioritization, that whenever a user has a new feature that they want, we ask them to create it in GitHub, and so we can track it and then either recruit someone to implement and help mentor them, or take on ourselves. Another thing that we view is when we have this idea of like a docs bug, that when our documentation is confusing, we try to take that seriously and don't just view that as like, oh, they didn't understand. We instead view that that's a problem in our documentation. So we'll open up a ticket or either direct it or fix it directly of needing to go and rewrite what people found confusing.
good first picks. The documentation is usually a good first pick.
Yeah,
just reading through the docs and then having like for pants, for example, it's like their docs allow you to give feedback right there. And I think I've abused that feature a bunch of times. And I think for other newcomers, it's a safe way to just get involved. And when they accept your change, it's a really exciting experience. And you just kind of want to keep doing it.
So I first started using Pants as an intern at Foursquare, I think about 3.5-4 years ago. Wasn't contributing at all to it. It was just another tool I had to learn among dozens of other tools. And then I was trying to do a change to migrate the company to Python 3. And it ended up being that Pants was a blocker for us. So I opened an issue on like, hey, what would it take for me to migrate Pants that I don't really have much interest in, but it's going to unblock me from this project I really want to do. Community was really supportive and fell in love with the community and then started contributing and led that project and then worked on the project for Twitter and now at Toolchain. So I try to think a lot about my experience when I was an intern and constantly remind myself of it that, to be honest, Pants, we rewrote Pants and launched Pants 2 about a year and a half ago, which was a ground up rewrite. And at the time when I first started using Pants as an intern, the other interns and I didn't really get what the tool was for. And we thought that it wasn't super intuitive and was sometimes clunky, even though I was trying really hard to do good things. And that's my personal goal now with Pants is that it is so intuitive for beginners and for summer interns that they know already why it's worth using.
That's great. So you came in as that, the original concept, right? And you didn't really know that much about it. Sorry, forgive the Buddhist term.
Beginner's mind.
See, yeah. Beginner's mind. I didn't know it. And now you have the curse of knowledge.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I try hard to remember what it was like to go back, but I still have blind spots that I have to, which we can get into in a little.
So let's get into that now.
Yeah,
let's get into those now. I think that's a really good segue to that next question. So you went from a beginner to now you've got the curse of knowledge. And Eric, why don't we come back to you? Because Nick, I don't know if you have, I mean, we've all had similar experience. Everyone starts new and then becomes an expert in whatever, and maybe not an expert, maybe that's the wrong word, but has curse of knowledge, right? So what are some things you could do to go from having that curse of knowledge now back to that beginner's mind?
Talk to people. You gotta, the moment that anybody raises an issue, like they're having a problem, and that's the moment that you should go in and communicate with them, understand the problem they're having and document it. It really helps like in the remote world that we're all in to just get on a call with somebody, have them share their screen and then actually walk through and help them. One practice that we do a lot at Rippling is we have a channel where we try to keep all the contacts for developer issues in. And there's like a ticketing system and we track it. And whenever something new comes up, we immediately try to document it. And then we have automation that could come in. If a similar question is asked, we immediately post the documentation so they know. And for me, that's a good way. The moment that somebody has an issue, I get on a call, I actually realize like, oh yeah, that's really not supposed to be happening. Okay, well, let's make sure this is documented so it doesn't happen again. And then that kind of like brings me back into their shoes. And then just seeing like the human aspect of them, like they're really trying. They're not just sitting there and like throwing stuff at the wall. They're like really trying to figure out what's going on here. So I think just communication is key to just talk to people.
Yeah, that's great. And for Eric now, from your Pants experience, even what are some tools that you use?
Yeah, so I'd add on to Nick with talking to people, and I would add talking to people with diverse experiences, including people with less experience. One of the things I was really excited about this past year was to mentor an intern at Toolchain, and I find right now with recruiting that a lot of companies are primarily targeting senior engineers. which are important to any organization, but I think that the industry would do well to go out of their way to support and bring on more junior engineers and more interns and recognize the asset that those engineers bring to an organization and the perspective that they bring. Another really useful technique that we've used is when we are trying to re-envision a part of Pants, we often do an exercise where we intentionally disregard all 10 years of history of the project, all prior art. And we think if we were to do this from brand new without precedent, what would be the best design and the most intuitive design? And once we figure that out, we then invite back in the precedent and technical architecture and everything and try to figure out, okay, how can we rectify these two and make this actually happen? And that's where the knowledge that we do have is incredibly useful, that we can often figure out based off of our experience, this is how we can make that vision happen. But to create the vision, we find it's helpful to consider what would we do if we did this completely new.
Yeah, that one, I really like that example. I mean, they're all great examples, but that one resonates because I feel like sometimes we do the, okay, if we were going to make this decision in a vacuum, what would it be? What would it look like? Right. And we always, you hear that being thrown around a lot, and that sounds great, but you can't make a decision in the vacuum. You have all these preconceived notions, you have these rules, you know, whatever it may be about why you can or can't do something. But then I think coming up with it in the vacuum and then going back and saying, okay, if we were to stretch to get to this, how would that look like? Take some work, right?
Yeah. And I think it's an important nuance that, I mean, we're an open source project, organizations depend on and teams depend on that. We do need to care about backwards compatibility and offer a good story there. So
yeah,
it's a tension between we want it to be as intuitive as possible for newcomers. We also have these decisions we're tied to that don't make as much sense now, but they made a lot of sense 5 years ago or 2 years ago. So how do we rectify both of those? Mm-hmm.
So we discussed, you know, the Buddhist concept of beginner's mind and how that kind of helps overcome the curse of knowledge. And those were some great tools. Now here's a new term, the power of the outsider. So can you explain that a little bit? And then, you know, how does it relate to all of this?
Yeah, I think the power of the outsider for Pants itself is exactly what Eric was saying earlier. Just having people come in and tinker and use the product in a way that maybe they never even thought of before. And that kind of shows them that there actually is value there, right? There could be value if we design the tool to work that way. So what that could drive is decisions, you know, let's say for their yearly planning and say, hey, like we want better incremental adoption because people going from no pants to wearing pants have to incrementally get there, right? And so I think the power of the outsider is just that feedback loop that is absolutely critical for any project to succeed, whether it be an open source project or an internal like product that you're building for a company, right? We have testers, right? We have people that will use the product and give us feedback right away. We take that feedback very seriously. And they're the ones outside of the org, right? They don't see how we build it. And they might even use the product in a way that we never thought of. So we got to take that seriously and tap into that knowledge of the outsider.
Yeah. And just, I loved your episode a couple weeks ago about silos and remote work. I think that's very relevant here. One of the important things that we as an open source community have tried to focus on is making sure that the community is represented by multiple organizations. I work for Toolchain, which is the lead sponsor of the project. But there's multiple organizations that are both active users and also have active maintainers. We found that having that diversity of stakeholders has made the project overall more resilient and brought in new perspectives that we wouldn't have considered if it was only Toolchain.
From projects big and small, companies big and small, it doesn't matter. Their name is there. You could be like them, essentially.
Well, Eric, Nick, thank you so much for coming on. You've taught me a lot. I came in as an outsider to this concept, and I am a beginner, and now I feel like I have not a lot, but I have some of that curse of knowledge on the topic. I know enough to be dangerous, as some people like to say, right? Okay, we have to touch on the pig real quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Eric, tell me a little bit about the pig.
Yeah, so I would love to eventually adopt some potbelly pigs. They're extremely smart. A lot of people say that having a pig is like having a three-year-old toddler. And they're actually a lot cleaner than a lot of people realize. That they can live indoors as long as they have some outdoor space.
Probably much cleaner than my three-year-old was.
Yeah. So there's this really cool sanctuary down in Tucson called the Ironwood Pig Sanctuary. And one of the fun projects I did last year was that they had a website written in literal HTML and CSS from 2002. Someone generously donated back in 2002. They'd been using this website for 20 years. So I remade their website using Squarespace. And it's a sanctuary with 650 potbelly pigs that a lot of people, when they adopt a pig, breeders will lie and say that they're mini pigs or micro pigs or teacup pigs. They're not actually, they're baby pigs. And the breeders will say they won't be more than 40 pounds. They often grow up to 150. And people don't clear it with their HOA or don't realize like what it takes to have that big of a pig. So I think it's something like 95% of people who adopt a pet pig end up giving it up for adoption.
Wow.
So it's an amazing sanctuary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not fun for the pig, but
not fun for the pig.
Amazing sanctuary. I love to visit pretty close to where I am in Phoenix. And they have this like sponsor a pig where they'll write you letters about your pig and so on.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And Nick, you do DIY. What do you DIY?
More recently, like home automation. So having an internal Kubernetes cluster, running all the home lab jazz, a pie hole, all that good stuff. We like to do internal development or like side projects, right? And this is just like a platform that we can use to experiment and test on. And I think it's pretty amazing, like all the open source tools out there. Like you could get from zero to almost being like your own cloud provider. It's pretty amazing. So now we got like a bunch of computers in our house, like being shipped all over from our friends, like any part that we could get and just add a node to our cluster and extend it out. Like we're really trying to do that. And it's a lot of fun. Like you learn a lot of cool practices while doing it.
Awesome. Does your house glow can you see it from outer space?
I could change my lights in my room with any color. So that's pretty cool.
That's all cool. From
one dashboard. Yeah. But I think the next step, yeah, glow from outer space. And then we'll have like the pigs, advertisement be up there and, you know, they don't. Yeah.
That's great.
By the way, with the website remake project that I mentioned, that there's a lot of organizations out there where they're awesome at what they do. Like these six people who run the sanctuary know everything there is to know about pigs. Technology is a little overwhelming to them. Kind of like Jason, it sounds like your mom with text messages. So even if you're not a software engineer, there are a lot of opportunities of like, all I did was set them up with Squarespace. I didn't program anything. And then I set them up with like new email. That a lot of organizations would love your help with tech, even if it's not actual programming.
Random acts of kindness. We discussed this with Gautam Palapa and nice. His new book on empathy. And it's, I think everybody could find something that they could do to contribute, to do something to kind of give back. So appreciate you saying that, Eric. And Eric and Nick, really appreciate you coming on the show, giving us some of your time, and teaching us all about, about this whole. I mean, the concepts of curse of knowledge and the power of the outsider and beginners, and I mean, geez, there's a lot of new concepts thrown at me. So I really appreciate your walking through it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having us. And now I'd also, we're a friendly bunch on the Pantsbuild Slack. So even if you don't want to use the technology or anything like that, you just want to talk more about this, we'd be happy to have you join.
Yeah, that'd be great. I would love to jump in. Awesome. And thank you to our listeners for joining us for this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm going to end this episode the same way I always do, encouraging you to become a member of DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.